What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 368 of the PS4 Blackcast. I am JCN, with this week is Izzly.
Yo.
And Messiah.
Hello.
And here we are, all together. The past couple weeks has been like one person or the other person. We haven't had both on in a while. We'll go ahead and just jump into the news. Because the new release, as far as what I know, came out was Iron Man VR. I haven't played it. I saw some getting some okay reviews. I don't think there was anything else that was big. Because anytime I go to the games, new releases, sometimes it's like it doesn't really up stuff that's actually new. So I'm like, okay, well, because like Greymore for Elder Scrolls, which was content that came out, I think that came out like 2 weeks ago, like Disintegration or Desperados 3. I think maybe Desperados 3 is a new game, but I know Iron Man VR is like the only new one. But yeah, we'll go ahead and jump to the news real quick. We have a couple things. I saw that Amazon Studios teased that they're going to be doing a Fallout TV series with the Westworld creators Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy serving as producers. So they did like a small 23-second tease on their Twitter account. It's just exactly what you'd expect. It's the standard old-timey music, the TV zoom out, and the please stand by. And you can hear some stuff in the background going on. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that goes. I'm curious how much Nolan and Joy will be involved, since they're only producers. And then I'm wondering, like, what's the writing team going to look like? Like, who are they going to be? But I feel like you could see. I feel like that's something that you could easily do, because it's not like the stories are initially that grandiose. Obviously, people talk about, you know, New Vegas having so much. There's no necessarily good or bad choices. It's a lot of gray stuff.
There are definitely actual good and bad choices in New
Right.
Vegas.
Yeah. But I mean, like, overall, like, a lot of the choices you have, you don't know the effect. Like, they're not necessarily clear right away that, hey, this is, you're taking the karmically bad path right now or something. So I'll be curious to see how they, like, where it takes place, how much Bethesda is involved. Because there's, like, a lot of lore stuff you got to fit in there. Like, it's not, like, depending on when you walk, like, which vault they're coming out of, if they're coming out of a vault, what year is it, you know, so it'll be interesting to see, because I know Todd Howard's going to be the executive producer of the show, but yeah, we'll see. I'm sure right now it'll be in pre-production, they'll probably, you know, plan everything out, but I doubt it'll get under actual, you know, shooting until next year because of COVID and, you know, whatnot. But yeah, we also had this week Ubisoft showed off a new Battle Royale game called Hyperspace. They have a beta going up this weekend. I think it's invite only for certain streamers. I know they're doing drops. I don't know if the drops include beta access for other people. I know, I think Valorant, that's how Valorant did it as well, to get other people into the beta was via drops. It's just a 100-person Battle Royale with solo squad mode right now. It looks okay. I'm not really a big fan of the style. It's basically, the whole map is basically just a giant city, so there's no real like biomes or terrain differential stuff depending on where you drop. It's all just a city. The one thing they do kind of cool is that the weapons, it's like most Battle Royale games outside of like Apex, like, you know, Fortnite and Modern Warfare Warzone, is that, you know, when you go and you find, like, you have a gray weapon, and then you go and you find, okay, now here's a gold or, you know, a blue or whatever. Usually now in Warzone, that just means it's got more attachments. So the higher rarity of the color, the more attachments on the weapon, which typically can mean it's obviously going to be better than the gray version, which has nothing. But some of those attachments you might not like. Maybe you don't like a 4x scope on your assault rifle or something, but it has a drum mag or it has armor-piercing rounds or something. No, that's actually a pickup, not a standard weapon. But that's how they do their tier ranking. Apex is just the guns all the way through, and it's the attachments that change in their tier rankings, like higher ammo capacity, yada, yada. And then in Fortnite, of course, they have the color system where a green shotgun's better than a gray shotgun, and so forth, does more damage. The way they do it in this, though, is that if you have a gun and you find a gun of the same type, you just pick that gun up, and you essentially upgrade the gun you're carrying, which I think is a really cool idea. Reminds me a lot of like when in games where weapons would break, you know, speaking of like Fallout and stuff, where you just pick up more guns to repair your gun you're currently using. But I like the idea that now, because once you get your loot, you're kind of done looting in most games. It's like, okay, I don't need loot anymore. I got all the ammo I need. I got all the, you know, meds. Maybe you're looking for one attachment in the game or something, like Apex, but you're typically not looting anymore. So this is kind of nice. It's like, oh, I have a gun, but if I keep looking for the same gun, at least I can upgrade it to the higher tier, which is interesting. But I'll be curious to see how it does. Like I said, I don't really like the style of it. But you know, and it also seems like it's really, the time to kill seems really long, which I don't like. But I also don't like Warzone's time to kill is too short. I like, that's why I really like Apex. Like, I feel like Apex is, the, for me, is the perfect level. Because in Warzone, like, if you get caught off guard, they're basically done as a player. But in Apex, if you get caught off guard, typically you have enough maneuverability if you're the right legend, or you just duck, dive, dip, dodge, and duck out of there with a 5D's and dodgeball. But, and you can pretty much recover, or you can turn around, and if it's a bad player who just happened to get a couple shots on you, you can take them down pretty fast if you're lucky. But I like the TTK in Apex much better. But yeah, in this game, it seemed like it was way too long. But yeah, we'll see how that goes. I mean, it doesn't have a whole lot of Twitch viewers the other day. I was looking at it just because I was curious. Cause, like, when Valorant came out, they had a lot of people watching it. And they had drops, even in, like, the AM. And it was, like, 12 AM when I was seeing how much it had. And it was just, it was nothing. Like, it was pretty low. And I was like, yeah, it doesn't bode well, but we'll see. They also, Ubisoft also teased their Ubisoft Forward event, which is going to happen on Wednesday. They had a short little trailer, which looked to show, like, it was like split screen showing Watch Dogs Legion and Assassin's Creed Valhalla. It's kind of cool to watch, just a short little teaser. So they're quoted saying the following, you know, Ubisoft Forward is a summer celebration of Ubisoft's upcoming lineup of games and content, and it's right around the corner. The event will stream live on Ubisoft.com. So of course, that'll be at 12. That'll be on the 12th at 3 p.m. Eastern. So, oh, that's weird. So at 12 Pacific Standard Time, they list like all these other times. Like, I saw BSC. What the hell is that? Threw me off for a second. But yeah, so you can, I'm trying to think what else they'll have. Maybe they'll probably do more hyperspace, but if it's just Watch Dogs and Assassin's Creed, it's kind of weird that it would be. I mean, I guess they could re-announce, you know, the new release date for Watch Dogs. You know, that got delayed. Like, everything that was supposed to release originally this year got delayed. And I imagine the only thing that's probably on track is Assassin's Creed. But we'll see what they say. Maybe Watch Dogs, if it gets delayed to 2021. Who knows? But again, that'll be Wednesday. And then we also had another dev look at Outriders, which showed some play in like the main area of the game. It showed like a character, your character going through doing a couple side missions, talking about the convoys, which is basically like there's a main city hub where you can go, and it's like, oh, you have your weapon upgrade, NPC, and all this stuff, and then there's this convoy you can get that will follow you as you explore out, which will take those NPCs, so all those vendor NPCs will kind of go with you as you expand on the world.
Outriders looks like the most the most launch game of like a console ever. Like, I don't know how to describe it other than like it looks like a stereotypical launch game where you're like, there's not a whole lot else out. It looks like it could be really fun. It looks pretty ridiculous. It looks like a launch title for a console.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how much of that too is like, obviously because it's released on PS4 as well, so it's cross gen. So you have that factor in there.
It doesn't look bad, though. It just looks exceptionally normal, but still fun. Like, it looks like it takes very little risks, but it still looks like it's going to be a blast to play, which is the most launch game type of game I can think of.
Right. I'm just curious, like, with all the stuff they're doing, like, what kind of, because it's cross-gen, what kind of limitations do the current consoles have that they would have, like, would it be a bigger world? You know, bigger areas to fight in and explore. Like, I'm curious what kind of held them back because of the PS4 and Xbox One. But this is, of course, by People Can Fly. they're doing it. And yeah, they showed the Pyromancer class in one of the main highlight videos, which I think now I'll probably play. I was leaning more towards Trickster initially. But once I saw the Pyro class, I was like, you know what? I'll probably play the Pyro class. You can look those up. Both videos, I think, are about 10 minutes long each. And then we also had Sony showcasing 9 new games headed to PS5 and PS4 as part of their indie initiative, which is being led by Shuhei Yoshida, who's the former head of the Worldwide Studios, of course. They showed a 2-minute, actually it's only a minute long, it's a PlayStation Indies montage, shows a bunch of little indie games, and then of course all these games are announced formally coming to, if anyone's were going to come to PS5 and Xbox Series X, they were announced on their own, but they were highlighted by PlayStation. One of the ones that stood out to me was a game called Cardo, which is like a little puzzle adventure game. So like you're this little character walking around, and basically you get like to the edge of the world, and then you open up the world map, and essentially it's like, okay, I need to get, you know, from one spot to another. Okay, how do I get there? It's like, oh, you just reach up, and the map's like cut into grids, and you reach into a grid that you don't need, and you just grab it and move it. And so now when you go back out of the world map, you can explore more areas, and it looks pretty cool. Like, you watched a short little trailer for it, it looks like it could be a fun little puzzle game. But yeah, there's a couple of things there. There's a hacking game called a Recompile, which comes to PS5 as well, and that one looks interesting. I'm curious if that'll be launch. I'm wondering how many of these indie games would be launch titles. But yeah, Cardo looks pretty cool. I'm looking forward to that. But yeah, there's like 9 games. Again, you can go. There's Heavenly Bodies, Fist, Forge, and Shadow Torch. Another game called Where the Heart Is, which is a lot of people are calling out that it could be pretty good. It's a narrative adventure between truth and fiction. It's coming out winter 2020 to PS4. But yeah, go look that up. Again, a bunch of games, a bunch of indie games. Look promising. Final Fantasy XIV is also going to get their 5.3 update on August 11th. Promises a lot of new content. Is this one of the leading up to a 6.0, or is this like the halfway point to a 6.0 kind of update?
It'll be the lead up, because I think the 0.3 patches are always the start of the lead up to the next expansion. So I don't know if they're going to leave out or modify some of the story that's supposed to lead up to it, because obviously they're not going to be announcing the expansion, but in November anyway. I don't know if they're actually going to announce it or if they're going to wait till they do FanFest stuff next year, but the 0.3 is almost always the lead up into the next expansion, so there's supposed to be a huge chunk of story. I think Yoshida said that when he was reviewing the story content, he said it was about a movie's worth of cutscenes and story content that is going to be in this patch. So there's supposedly a huge amount of main quest stuff in it.
Is this the Yoko Taro patch, or did that happen already?
No, I think this is going to be the patch. I'm pretty sure this is the one that's going to add the next section of the raid, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. I keep getting it confused because they keep talking about next up stuff and future stuff. And because of the whole COVID bullshit, it's all getting like pushed back and mixed up. So I keep getting the dates and the patches mixed up. But I think this patch is going to have the next raid tier. It would make sense because it's a full numbered patch and it's a big one. So I don't know if they ended up splitting it or not.
You didn't see. I guess that could depend too on. I wonder how much like COVID impact would determine if they split stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, let's just typically it would have been all together, but we can get some of this out now.
Yeah, unless like they're worried about mushing too much stuff together, because there might be something that was ready for a later patch that was already ready, and anticipating the main patch being like a sub patch and anticipating the main patch being released already. And I don't know if they're going to mush that together, or if they're just going to try to keep it spread out. I don't know what they're doing. I haven't been watching a lot of the live letters because they're Yoshida's obviously doing them from home in Japan, so they're at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I can't stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning on a Friday morning. But yeah, because of all like the changed dates and the pushback, and they keep talking about stuff that's gonna happen with him, blah blah blah, I just keep getting confused about what's gonna happen when. So I just know that 5.3 is gonna be a massive main story patch.
That's cool. I wonder how long FF14 will, because is 11 still going, or did they kind of stop?
No, it's still going. They still have monthly patches.
Like story patches?
No, not story, I don't think. Unless they're doing, like, because I think Outland is done, and I think it's been done for a while, but I don't know if they've been doing other, I know they were doing, like, mini stories or something like that, with, like, specific NPCs and adding to the trust system. But I know that they, well, they do monthly updates every month, so I don't know if, I don't know if they're adding story to it, but like the overall expansion story is done as far as I know, because there hasn't been a new expansion since Adeline.
And when did that come out?
When I still played the game. So many, many years ago.
Okay. So basically it's been done from a main story, giant arc kind of situation for a while.
Yes, I believe so. And I think the last thing that they did was that like recollection, I think, which was like, a series of, it wasn't an expansion, it was just like a series of free patches or something like that, where there was a story in that, and because they did a tie-in event to 14 when that came out, and I'm not sure if that's still going or if that finished too, because even that was a few years ago that they did that.
Yeah, because I'm curious how long 14 will go, because I mean, this is, it came out, Realm Born came out before PS4 came out, so it's like, I'm wondering, and it's about to hit PS5, so it's been, you know, quite a while.
And I think they've already stopped the PS3 support.
Oh yeah, they stopped that. I remember when they stopped the expansion, like when they said this is the last PS3 one.
When Stormblood came out, I think they didn't release a PS3 version of Stormblood.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm wondering how long they'll stop and then maybe move on to like FF17 MMO. Like, will they keep this one going, or will they? I don't know. I mean, they
imagine they'll keep it going as long as they have subscriptions. Because look how long 11's been going.
Yeah,
and 11 has been 11 is so vastly different now than what it was. So I can imagine 14 doing something similar, where they just kind of, like, soft reset the game or soft revamp the game and everything, because especially with the way 14 is, they already sort of had to do that with Shadowbringers when they raised the level cap. They had to like reset a lot of basic game mechanics. So
I wonder if they'll do like the WoW thing though, because like, you know, WoW for a long time it had the same art, and it, you know, it showed its age a lot, and then eventually they did an updated asset to it. Now, it wasn't necessarily like a crazy overhaul. It wasn't like, you know, going from Unity to Source 2 or Unreal Engine 5 or something. But I'm wondering if they'll do something like maybe like a 7.0. It's like, okay, when 7.0 launches, we're going to redo the entire engine to make it look better. And then, you know, launch like where it's just enhanced graphics or something. Like, I'm curious if they'll do anything like that. Be interesting.
Yeah.
I also, last story that I saw, which I thought was kind of silly, was that, so, you know, Crisis Remastered is going to be coming out. I think it was supposed to come out soon.
At some point.
And then the gameplay trailer, I guess, leaked ahead of time, because I think it was supposed to come out on Wednesday. And it leaked, and then a lot of people were like, this doesn't look, it looked that great, like, compared to the original. And so then the Crisis Twitter account's like, they tweet out a thing, you know, hey, you know, we're going to postpone the game for a bit, so it's up to the standards of the community that you guys, you know, the passionate Crisis franchise fans, you know, you deserve more. So I'm like, I'm curious, like, I haven't actually watched to see what it looks like, because I didn't care. But I'm curious, like, how much they'll be able to upgrade it, especially if you don't delay it by that much. I mean, I don't know how you did it. It's like, oh, the trailer was in medium settings. We forgot to turn on ultra. Our bad. Like, yeah. How much are you going to be able to do? Just
short or they it was in medium settings because ultra settings runs like the original Crysis ran. So they were like, we need to get this optimization done.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm like, uh-oh. Is this like going to be Crunch City? Like, what are you guys doing?
Ugh, yikes. But,
yeah, it's pretty nuts. But, all right, well, that's it for the news. I really got to do better about taking notes. There's like a lot of stuff. Luckily, a lot of things that I wanted to talk about are related to The Last of Us 2. And so I remember those now. And I took one note in the thing. So once we start talking about that, I'll hopefully not forget them.
What do you mean, notepad?
I don't think there was anything else. Well, typically I like to save like the stories, but for the most part, I found all the ones I wanted. Like I remembered the Fallout TV series like right before we started recording. I was like, oh, add that to the list. But I mean, we just had more, you know, like we talked about, I guess it was last week or I think it was last week we talked about it. You know, all the stuff going on in the games industry, there was more from that from Ubisoft for like execs stepping down and over allegations and all that stuff. And but yeah, but other than that, that's basically it for the news. So we can get into what we've been playing, and I'm sure eventually we'll just talk in the back half about Last of Us. We'll probably talk about it for a good bit. It'll probably be it'll be spoilers, like probably once you start talking, and then I guess I will bounce it because Izzy's beaten it since last time we recorded, and so I'm sure he'll want to talk about more of the end stuff. So then she'll probably drop, and then we'll just go into full-on spoilers about the whole game.
I'll go maybe once you go beat the game.
There you go. Yeah, I'm curious when you're like, oh, I'll back out. I guess Zencastr should be fine if you just leave. Like, I don't think it'll be a problem. Like, it should just save your recording. Like, I'm assuming that's how it's going to go, like, once you leave.
Oh, I can just take my headphones off. It's that's fine.
Okay,
yeah. Secretly, it will just cut her part out.
Yeah.
Well, it has like a, like, because they have like kick options. Like, I can kick you both from Zencastr, but I'm like, but if I kick you, does it still save the audio? You know, because it's on the website. It'll just be
a one sided conversation during that last chunk. You'll just be talking and asking questions and then like a gap of silence.
Yeah. I just don't exist anymore.
But yeah, we'll get into what we've been playing first. So, what have you been, I know you played some last week because there's a lot you haven't played, Zaya, but you've been playing a lot of Terraria still?
Yeah, we started playing Terraria with Michael and his brother and his brother's friend because we kind of burned out on Don't Starve, and we played through it so quickly that we kind of did everything anyway. So we started playing Terraria over the weekend. They've played it a lot, and I've never played it before.
But are you playing on PS4?
No, we're playing on computer. Oh,
good.
But there's no fucking way I'd play Terraria with a controller. But
I would have been mad at you if you were playing without me.
Oh no! But I realized the reason I never played Terraria is because I can't fucking see anything. Everything's so small, and apparently this is like my old lady game, and I've decided that this is what I'm going to be a crotchety old hag about. I cannot play this fucking game. I can't see anything. I had to put my glasses on to play this game. But I'm just kind of like along for the ride because they've played it a lot. Michael's played it a lot, and he's played a lot of modded Terraria. And I'm just kind of like, okay, I'm gonna build a bridge. I'm gonna build a house. I'm gonna go fishing. I want bees. Can we go get bees? And I'm just kind of like, I'm just kind of there. So it's been kind of interesting just to see. I mean, I guess it's good that they kind of know what they're doing because now we can actually properly prepare and fight all the bosses and do all the interesting stuff, but it's kind of just like I'll be doing something or trying to organize my inventory and trying to find a one by one fucking pixel icon that I'm looking for, and they'll be like, okay, we're ready to fight a boss, we're in the arena. I'm like, okay, I'll be there in a second, I guess. But fun. It's fun.
Yeah, as long as you're having fun.
Yeah, it's fun.
And what about you, Zay? I know you finished Tila. How did you work on the platinum, or do you play something else?
I'm still working on the platinum, Last of Us, and then I also picked up Dreams because I saw a cool post about someone who made Legend of Zelda in Dreams, and I was like, you know, it would be cool is to make a Bloodborne type game in Dreams.
That I posted in the Discord?
Yeah,
is that the
yeah.
one?
I said, I saw a cool post. I didn't specify who. But yeah, I picked up Dreams, and I've been playing around with that, and I don't understand it yet. I feel like I'm going to have this moment where like everything clicks, but right now I'm kind of just like, what does this do? I'm not sure what that did. Let me try six other things. Like, it's an interesting game. I don't really have strong opinions on it yet, but I want to go play it right now, and I'm like refraining from doing so. So I mean, it's drawing me back.
Yeah.
But I don't really have a full enough understanding of how it works and how everything ties together to really like fully appreciate it yet. So I hopefully have more input on that next week.
Yeah, I saw it. I didn't talk about it on the show because I wasn't sure how relevant it would be, but it is getting VR support. So that'll be...
Any of us had VR.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? VR. Yeah, it'd be interesting, like, once you start making stuff and you record the videos of it, hopefully not with your phone, post it in Discord.
I will record them with my phone just to annoy you, sir.
Get like the whole setup too, like go all in and get like the gorilla pod and set it up like behind your couch or something, pointing at your TV, so it's not only recording the screen but like your whole around, like your entertainment center.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
So it's just
that's
like
good.
It's just like a webcam pointed at your TV, and that's how you stream.
JCM's like, I'll fucking kill you.
I was like, well, I guess we'll, I won't click on
this. Boot you from our group chat.
There you go. But yeah. We'll definitely have to keep us up to date on how, like, the learning curve and all that stuff. Yeah, because there was, like, a while there on the subreddit on PS4 where it was just people showing off stuff that made, you know, in Dreams. Like, there was that one for a while where it was, like, it was walking along a path next to a creek, and then there was a thunderstorm. And it was, like, it looked really good. Like, it was, like, photorealistic looking. Like, I thought, when I first watched it, I was, like, Why are we just watching? I didn't really, because I, you know, I'm browsing just my homepage. I'm not in the PS4 subreddit. I just click on a thing, and it's like, why did someone just post them walking along this path, like they're hiking or something? And then I realized it was PS4 subreddit, and it was Dreams. Like, it took me a while to realize, like, because it was like the frame rate was perfect. Like, I don't know if they purposely made it kind of look like 24, but it almost felt like that. And then that's right. Like, there was one moment where I think they panned the camera. And I noticed it was a little too smooth. Like what I was saying, I was like, okay, I hit that uncanny valley with it. I was like, oh, this is in Dreams. I was like, oh, this is nuts.
That's wild. But
yeah, they make some crazy stuff in there. Yeah. Before I get to it, I forgot one thing I wanted to talk about was that so Xbox is, and is related to PlayStation, PS5 specifically, is that they're supposed to have an event this month to talk about games, you know, because they didn't really talk about games in the last one. Like, they apologized for how bad their gameplay event was supposed to be. But the rumors from multiple sources is that they're supposed to announce their Lockhart console in August. Now, the conventional thinking among everybody is that if you're going to show, you know, quote, your cheaper platform, then you have to talk about the price of your main console in comparison to the value you're giving to customers for the cheaper version. You can't just show it and be like, hey, it's a cheaper version, you know, it's a little less powerful, but you don't tell them why it's worth buying this than buying the Series X when there's no price point to either. So people think that, okay, well, if you're going to do this, then you have to announce your price at some point before then or during that event. So if they do that, then that means Sony would probably be following quickly behind, if not ahead of time. But then another rumor came out is that they're supposed to, from a good source, one of the, I forget their Twitter handle, but like there's someone who like leaks a lot of stuff on, like they had leaked stuff on PS5 previously that was, you know, spot on. I forget exactly what it was, but it was basically a roadmap for events that are going to happen. You know, they talk about the Xbox event, you know, and the person replied like, oh, July 17th is the PS5 price thing. So there's a chance that based on this other rumor, it could happen on the 17th. Now, I imagine if they look at the rumors on Microsoft, they might delay that. So I feel like that would be, they, unless they're confident in their pricing structure for the PS5 and the digital edition already, then they won't wait. But so there's a good chance in either this month or next, we could see the PS5 pricing. Plus, it's like, you're so close to launch if it's going to be in November.
Mm-hmm.
Like the past two consoles, that you need to get the pre-orders out there. Yep. So, I also saw another article saying how they can, at one of their stores, one of their production facilities, they can manufacture a PS4 in 30 seconds. And I was like,
oh my God.
Yeah, like the robots they have just work. Like the only thing the only thing people have to do is they have to set the motherboard in the line, in the production line. And then I think obviously just whatever QA they do at the end of the production line and the packaging and stuff like that. But everything else is just done automatically and it can be manufactured in 30 seconds. I'm like, I wonder if you can do the same thing with you're going to have that same speed with the PS5, but jeez. Obviously you have to tweak all your production line to
mm-hmm.
do it. Same. I can do that too. 30 seconds. Same.
I bet. Yeah. Same. I know I can get the top off of my PS4 and back on in 30 seconds at least. So, but, yeah. So hopefully we'll see some prices soon and definitely have pre-orders go up. That'd be nice. But, yeah, I haven't been playing much since I beat Last of Us. I did play a little bit of Apex, and then I restarted playing Darkest Dungeon. I got it on PS4. There was a bundle pack with the two big expansions that came out, and then some of the characters that they released as well. Started playing that, and then basically just been watching TV shows. I haven't been playing a whole lot of games. Dark Season 3, watch Warrior Nun. Yeah, I haven't been playing a whole lot. And I wish I could see how long I've been playing Darkest Dungeon since I downloaded it, but I know it's not a bunch. Still fun. Controls were definitely weird initially when I started playing because it was a lot of, like, I was like, I don't know why it needs to be this complicated for a console. And
it's like all menu, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's not quite intuitive like how you'd want it to be. Like, it's very much like, so you have a roster of all the people you have recruited. To run the dungeons, and it'll be like, oh, well, if you want to highlight the roster, you have to hold R2, and then you hit, you know, up and down with the joystick, not the arrow buttons, not the D-pad, and then choose who you want, and then as they're highlighted while you're still holding R2, you hit square to pick that person or whatever, and you hit, while you're holding R2, you hit, I think it's R1 and L1 to cycle through the way you want to sort people, and then it's just like, there's just a lot of, oh, you want to get to this? Oh, you have to hold this shoulder button to do that. Versus, now, initially I didn't like it because like, I'd rather just be able to use the D-pad. Like, you can use the D-pad in the main dungeon, like the town area, like to highlight all the different, you know, buildings you want to upgrade or you want to go to, whatever. But like, I had the hardest time was like, so they have these curios, which are like accessories that you can find. Or trinkets, sorry, curios are in the dungeon. And I was like, how the hell do I equip trinkets to my characters? And it's like, oh, well, what you have to do is when you highlight a character and you go to your roster, you pick a character and you hit square to look at their stat page. Then you hit triangle, which opens up the trinkets. And then you can choose which trinkets to add to each character. I was like, what? I was like, it was so weird. Now I got used to it super quick. And there's some of it kind of makes sense. Like, it's fine. It was really odd that they would choose this kind of control scheme.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. But yeah, aside from that, I did some collectible cleanups in The Last of Us 2. But yeah, I haven't really been playing a whole lot right now. But yeah, we'll go ahead and call this the spoiler spot to talk about Last of Us. Now, again, Zaya hasn't finished it. She's over halfway through. But there will be spoilers. And then, of course, later, Izzy and I will probably get into further spoilers. But for right now, it'll just be, if you haven't finished the game, but you're over halfway through, you should be fine. But, all right. So you, like you had said before we started recording, that you got to basically the end of day one as after the halfway point once you're Abby.
Yeah.
And then, but how, overall, how have you, I know initially you weren't on the podcast once you got up to day 3 is Ellie. So you haven't talked about it since day one in Seattle. So what? How are your feelings on the game overall so far?
I'm conflicted, to be honest. Like, I know I talked about wanting that confrontation between Ellie and Joel. Like, that's all I really wanted out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it. And that's fine. It was really satisfying. But it was really short. Because it was, this is where like my criticism of the game comes in. I don't like the flashback like model of telling the story,
mm-hmm.
because you can cop out on that confrontation by ending the flashback. And that's what I feel like happened. It just, it ended so quickly. Like it just, it happened. And then it, the flashback ends and then you're back in the present time and you're like, well, there was years or at least a year in between when the game started and that confrontation. It's like, I want to see the resolution of that. And I know that it's probably coming later on in the form of another flashback. And that annoys me. So that's like pretty much my only criticism of the game at this point. I know I'll probably have more the more that I play and the further that I get in it. But right now, the only thing I really don't like is that a lot of the story is presented in flashback form. And I guess I just realized I don't like that as a storytelling medium, or at least the way that it's so broken up, because you get little teeny tidbits of the story and you get little teeny revelations and then it just cuts and you're thrown back into like the modern timeline or whatever. And it's really jarring and it's really like, well, I wanted to see that part of the story, and now I'm either never going to get the resolution of that specific moment, or I'm going to have to wait 10 hours to see it. So that was kind of a bummer, but I mean, to be fair, I got what I wanted out of it. That's mm-hmm. what I said I wanted. I just wanted that moment and I got it. And even though it got cut short, whatever, I got it. It's fine.
Yeah, I've heard that that criticism from some other podcasts I listened to where they were talking about it, where like the turnoff for them as well is just the story structure,
mm-hmm.
How they don't like it, but they couldn't really think of if it would play out better if they had done it differently. Like one of their things that they don't like outside of the flashbacks, which they weren't necessarily too hard on, one of their complaints was that, you know, of course, once you get up to end of day three is Ellie, and then you had the confrontation with Abby, you know, and she says that, you know, we let you live and you wasted it, and then it just cuts. You have the flashback,
yeah.
And then it's Seattle day one again. Their thing was like, oh, I want to go back to where we were. I don't want to have to go through what, you know, 3 days of this. Like, so that was their only thing. But they didn't know, like, would it be better if, because then their thing was like, oh, what if you just did it where it was like, if you did day one, Ellie, then Abby, day two, then Ellie, then Abby, and day three, then Ellie and Abby. And it's like, and I thought like maybe some people might like that structure better, but I feel like it defeats, in my head, it would defeat the purpose of what Naughty Dog's trying to do with splitting up the 3 days is Ellie, 3 days is Abby. But I understand why that would definitely turn off, especially because like, it's almost like cliffhanger ending. Not as bad as Warrior Nun. But it's definitely like, well, I want to know what happens. You're like, okay, yeah, play through. And then they're kind of like, because that was this one person claimed, like, oh, I just kind of like sped through it. Like, they didn't initially care about the gameplay anymore because, like, okay, they noticed a lot of repetitive stuff now because they got so pulled out of it. But that was like, but it wasn't like not everybody had the same issue, but that I definitely have heard people talk about, you know, that's one thing that kind of.
And I see why they did it the way they did it. Like, I can see why they did it and I can see what they were going for. It's just a personal preference of.
Exactly. Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
realizing now that I don't like that method of storytelling because it's jarring. And I know that it's meant to be jarring if you do it well. And I feel like that's what they're doing here is it's meant to like put you in that heightened emotional state of, oh my God. And then take you straight out of it and take you, especially with the way that they do it when you cut from Ellie going to Abby, you have this really heightened state like, okay, we're obviously in spoilers. Somebody dies and gets shot in the face right. And you're in this like moment of like, oh fuck, what's going to happen? Oh my God. And then it cuts and you're Abby and you're just like chilling and walking through your, you know, home and seeing the world building and everything like that. And it's just like, you get whiplash almost. And I get that they did that. It's just a personal preference. I don't like that method of storytelling. Like I mentioned before, that was the only criticism I had for The Witcher on Netflix. That was like the only thing I didn't like about it was the time skip. So I'm realizing now I just don't like that.
Yeah,
but I don't, like you said, I don't know how else they would present that story unless they did larger flashback chunks at specific points in the game. Like, obviously I'm going to see the resolution of what's happening between Abby and Ellie in the theater, but I almost would rather see the resolution of that confrontation and then maybe play the lead up into it once it's heightened back down. Like, it's not a steep cutoff of the like emotional heightening. It's like you slope back down from it and then you're in the flashback and that's like the bottom of the slope going up again. But I know they were trying to elicit that like whiplash effect of like, wait a minute, something very important was happening. I would like to see that. And now you're like kind of just pulled out of it. And now you're trying to like get into the world building of this other character.
Yeah. Cause I like the only thing I think is if they did, instead of doing flashbacks, they just opened it up. Like the game starts with, you know, Joel telling Tommy,
yeah,
you know, they went to the Fireflies and all stuff. And then it just cuts to, you know, maybe you're Ellie and Jackson. And then it jumps ahead to when it's her birthday. And, you know, you go to the museum. And then it jumps again. Like, if we do all the jumps ahead of time, like, would that play out better to kind of put you in the headspace of, you know, once everything happens? Like, is it better that way? Like, it's definitely tough. Because how do you, if you're going to start a story from 4 years later, but there's all the stuff that happened in those 4 years that you can't actually play through, how do you present that? I think they talked about that in one of the podcasts. I forget which one I was listening to, but it was Neil Druckmann, and he was talking about it. Like, you know, coming up with how they're going to structure the game, especially with those flashbacks. Like, that was something they talked a lot about. Like, how are we going to, like, they debated a lot about, like, how are they going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The cut from the end of day three to Abby was kind of like, I think, already set in stone, or at least like the idea of it. Was already there, but yeah, definitely the structure was. Now I definitely felt that where it was like, you know, and you waste it, and I'm like, and then it cuts to black. I was like, and then there's a flashback. Oh, we're just gonna get a flashback, and we're Abby. Okay. Oh, she, her dad's the doctor. Okay. Oh, there's Marlene again, and then it shows going back to Joel's death and seeing from her perspective. And I thought, okay, now we're gonna jump back to the theater, and then when it says Seattle and it delays and it says day one, I was like, holy shit! I was like, we're going all like it. Yeah. That's when it hit me that we're playing as Abby through these days. So then, like, it kind of took away that surprise, like, cut to black from in the theater to going back. And then I was a little disappointed because I don't like being strung on, like, oh, you cliffhanged me, and you, yeah, but you surprised me the day one thing. That once we got back there, I did appreciate going through this from her perspective before going back to the theater and seeing the resolution there. I and of course, obviously you're not there, and who knows, maybe you still won't like it. Especially cause yeah, if we're just to talk about it, you know, as it happens versus after everything is resolved, I guess is a different, cause I'm also listening to a podcast, the Min-Max Show, and they're doing a deep dive, but the way they do their deep dives is they break it up in chunks. I'm like, I don't know how I could never do that. Like, yeah. Oh, only play up to Seattle day one or end of day one in, you know, this week. And then next episode we record, we'll talk about all of that and now record up through Seattle day three. And then, and it's like the way they're doing it, I'm like, so hearing them talk about too, where they have like complaints or not complaints, but like issues with the story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, or they speculate about X, Y, Z. It's like, oh man. But knowing, obviously I know what happens. It's like, I can't wait until you get to the next episode that you record, because then you'll be past, you know, point whatever and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And it's just like torture, because I see what they're doing. It's cutting at that moment because that's like, that's the moment that the game has been leading up to. And the fact that it happened in such a like unceremonious way, in such a like heightened way, and they cut it there. And that's like, okay, now we're going to tell you the other half of the story leading up to this moment. So you have a full understanding of the gravity of this moment and what's happening. Like, I see that, but it's just like, stop blue balling me.
Because I was also like, and easily cut in any point. I know I've been watching your bars been like flat the whole time because we keep talking, but anytime you want to talk, go ahead. But yeah, because I was like, I did go, how did she find us? Like, how did she know we were here? Yep. So I definitely like that, you know, they kind of go back and you see everything play out so you can get there. But how did you feel about that? Like when that happened, when it cuts to black and then it goes, but that was the night you were in a sleepy, you know,
I was haze. In a sleepy, drugged up state, but I still didn't like it. My biggest issue was the entire pacing of everything. And especially when you're playing as Ellie, it was like the interesting parts are happening in the flashbacks and those are the parts I cared about. And then the main story portion is Ellie, I kind of found dull. So all the flashbacks and all of the like cut to black stuff, it did not work for me. And I'll get into that more later after Zaya has left. But in general, it just it did not work for me.
Yeah, I did like the flashbacks. The one thing I like too is like every flashback with Ellie led up to that confrontation where it's like the first one, it's all happy that it's her birthday. And then you have that guy that died in the other building. And he's, you know, talking about all the horrible stuff he did and how there is no light. And then it ends with the Firefly logo and says liars beneath it. Mm-hmm. And like, cause Ellie sees that. And it's like, that's the first step of her kind of questioning, you know, what really happened. And then the same for the couple that died in the other place in the other flashback.
I think the reason it didn't super work for me was like, you see these flashbacks and like Zaya said, it happens like a year or two ago. And it's like, obviously you guys have had other conversations in between. So the story isn't actually ongoing and they intersperse the flashbacks in such a way to make it seem like it's related to the particular events, which I mean, it is in the sense that Joel died, but there's obviously like been a resolution to all of this. So there's no need to dangle the resolution of a flashback and try to make it seem like it's the resolution of like a particular cut to black within the game. Because it's not, it's happened a year or two ago. It's not the same.
Yeah, I guess just getting, I like seeing it because you, again, it's either we don't see anything in those 4 years and we just start where we are and there was no confrontation, I guess. So
to me, that tells you that maybe the timeline that they picked for the game isn't a good one. Like, in the first game, they interspersed really sweet moments in between all of the horror that happens. And, like, the giraffe scene you have, they come out of the, like, a fight with the clickers, and then you see, like, the giraffe, and it's, like, a really sweet moment. In this game, the sweet moments that are interspersed are all flashbacks, so it's not actually happening in real time. And it just, I don't know, it seemed like it kind of cheapened out. Like, one of the reasons I couldn't really connect with the Ellie half of the story in particular is, as all of these things are happening, there aren't really, there's like one or two sweet moments, like when Ellie sings like Take On Me, and that's a flashback too still. But at least she's playing like...
She's not a flashback, she sings Take On Me.
Well,
it flashes back when you do the second song, I think.
Yeah, and it's...
That's when she's alone in the theater, she plays, and she's playing the same song.
But it was more like... The sweet moments weren't occurring in the actual story. They were occurring in the past. And I kind of agree with Zaya that I guess that structure just didn't really work for me because it didn't really build any relationships. Like Dina was cool and I liked her as a character, but I wasn't super concerned about her, connected to her. Same thing with like Jesse, like he seemed like a nice guy, but the sweet moments were all in Ellie's past as opposed to sweet moments that were really happening in the moment, which as a structure for the game, maybe it would have worked as a movie, like a movie, but as a game, I didn't really care about it.
Because you don't get that, like, you as a player don't get to build that personal connection with these other characters.
Yeah.
Ellie has the history with the characters and they're obviously important to her and her friends, but I see what they're kind of going for. Like, they're trying to make the point that Ellie is like, so tunnel visioned on this like revenge thing that she's not obviously thinking clearly, and she's not herself, and she's just like losing it basically, which coincides with a lot of horrible moments that she has. But as the player, you don't get those human moments of like, or you don't get as many of those human moments as you did with Joel and Ellie, where you're really like, I love these people rather than these characters, you know, and you don't get that with these, with the new characters, which sucks because I love Dina. She seems awesome.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think you just nailed it. That was pretty much exactly what I had problems with.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Dina a lot. There's a, and I like Jesse as well. I like Jesse's character. His voice actor was, I thought he was really good. But yeah, when he dies, that was definitely like, that was one of those deaths that, like, I liked the death, if that makes sense, because it was unceremonious. It was just...
Yeah, it just happens.
Instant. It just happens, like, catch you off guard, and then...
And you don't even notice it at first. At least I didn't. I was like, oh, shit, he got hit, and then it clips, and then she, like, yeah, looked over to it, and I was like, oh, my God, he's dead! I was like, oh, and shit!
The one thing that stood out, too, and it was nice because I heard someone else on the podcast point it out, but, like, you know, when you're killing, like, all the enemies leading up to this moment, it's like, anytime he's like... No, Frank! Like, they called the characters out by name.
Yeah.
And so then when he goes to the door, he gets shot, and she's like, Jesse! And I'm like, it just, ooh, that moment reminded me a lot, like, oh, all these other, you know, people I've been killing, when they call out their friends' names and they get shot.
Yeah, because you, when you're doing it, it happens just as quickly. You know, you just kill somebody, and they're like, oh, Frank, or whatever, and then it happens to one of your characters, and you're like, oh no.
Yeah. But, yeah,
some of the deaths and things like that were cool, but like even when Jesse died, I liked the death, but it, by that point, he had a few cool moments to show he was a nice character, but because like Zaya said, there were no like super playable moments where you really connect with him. It was kind of like, oh, that's a shame. Like, cool, nice guy's dead, and he might have been the only nice person, but oh well, moving on.
Yeah, he doesn't have like a development of like that moment where you really sympathize or you see his character change like you do with Joel and Ellie in the first game.
There was Neil Druckmann. I don't know if it was the spoiler cast because I didn't listen to it yet, but I saw the pitch for what the game originally was, and I felt bad because what the game originally was, I like that idea way more. And what the game originally was like, Joel doesn't die right in the first 2 hours. The game essentially like builds up to his death and has you connect with, you weren't playing as Abby, you were playing as like some other character along with Ellie, and you play as both of them until eventually you get to a point where Abby's introduced, and then Abby betrays you and kills Joel like near the end of the game. And they were mentioning that like the problem they had with that is they didn't know what the start of the game actually would be. So like they used Joel's death to be like the revenge plot, which is kind of a writing no-no to begin with of motivating a story with one person's death. But that's what the game originally was, is that it would be based around something else and build up to Joel's death and the betrayal of Abby. And I felt bad because I'm like, honestly, that sounds like a way better idea to me.
Yeah, they just didn't have a way to like launch that off.
Right, but using a character death to launch it off is like one of the biggest writing no-nos of like, you don't try to start a story based on someone's death. And I know a lot of things do it successfully, like John Wick does it really well with like the dog death and things, but
it's kind of a very cheap cop out.
So I had a lot of issues with the structure and pacing of the game, and it's a shame because the general like ideas behind the game that they hammer in of like Ellie's revenge plot is tearing people apart and things like that, I really like. I just don't like how they executed it like at all. And it's like the music is great, the scenery is gorgeous, I love the gameplay, but the biggest part of The Last of Us 1 that I thought was perfect was the relationships and story. And that's, like, to me, what they kind of removed from The Last of Us 2. And it's like, you removed the most important part of the game for me.
While the relationships and that you really get is on Abby's side of the story. Because she's the only one who's really, you know, got the relationship stuff going on. I mean, the flashbacks are learning more about the other characters and stuff like that. Because I really like Owen.
Owen was, like, one of the only new characters I enjoyed. But obviously, no spoilers yet.
Yeah, I like... like no spoilers. Like, we know Ellie kills him. I like Owen a lot. I thought he's good. I also do like Abby, some of the other characters as well. His performance, I really like his. There's like this one scene with him later on that I love the delivery he has doing this, talking about this, telling this one story. I liked Owen a lot. I thought he was really good. I that's the one thing, like, once I finished the game, like, because I had no one to talk to, I just went back and watched like streamers who had done it, and I just watched all the main beats on their playlist, just like for like the original Last of Us or like God of War and stuff. I watched three other people react like the whole story. But the one scene I love too is, and obviously it's a heavy scene, because it's when we flash back to Joel's death from Abby's perspective. Mm-hmm. But after she does, you know, she kills Joel, and then when Manny and Mel and all them were talking about, you know, we should kill Ellie and Tommy, and then Owen's like, but they didn't do anything wrong. And the one guy's like, what about my face? He's like, fuck your face. Yeah. I just, the way he says it, it's like, I've seen it so many times. Like, I love that delivery. He's like, you should have been up there watching the front door. Like, I just love the, because I don't care about that other character with the face guy. I'm like, you can die. I don't care about you. But yeah. I was like, Owen's delivery with the fuck your face thing, I thought was so good.
And it shows his character too. That's like, obviously your fucked up face is not a reason to kill other people. And that's like, what they're arguing about. It's like, they haven't actually done anything. We got the person that did the really bad thing who deserved, you know, and right. That's another thing. It's like, I love Joel, but he deserved. He did some shit. And that's the thing is, you know, Owen and Abby too are like, we dealt with what we came here to deal with. They can go. And the other person's like, well, she stabbed me. It's like, well, fucking tough up. Like,
yeah.
Shut up. We live in the post-apocalyptic world. You're going to get stabbed once in a while.
Yeah. I will say, one of the things about Joel's death that did bother me, like, he obviously deserved it, but the start of the game was, like, so perfectly coincidental where the stars aligned for Abby of, like, they both go out in a blizzard. Like, Abby goes out in a blizzard, and and Dina go out in a blizzard, and Joel and Tommy go out in a blizzard, even though they know it's coming. And the like literal one person that Abby is looking for and runs into is Joel, instead of having to go into the town or like scout out at all, she just accidentally runs into him, and he's mm-hmm. the one that saves her. And then they just happen to have a friend's cabin nearby that nobody had like scouted out or known about, and go there. It was like, okay, you're pulling a few too many like coincidences. Like, at least make Abby work for it a tiny bit, like show her. So her doing some effort or work instead of just randomly being saved by Joel, and then she's like, well, guess it works out, it's fate.
Yeah, or like, what would have happened if they had taken everybody back to Jackson and then she found out that it was Joel? Right. Like, what happens that?
I think that was like my biggest problem with his death, is it happened so fucking quickly and easily that it was very much like, really? And I think that's when a lot of people claim like Joel would never get into this situation. I don't think they're necessarily mad that Joel got caught off guard like that. I think they're more mad that there were kind of a few assholes to actually get him to that in the first place that mm-hmm. were kind of weird. It didn't feel earned on Abby's part. It, like, his death itself, I was fine with, even her killing him quickly, because like it was tough, but it made sense. It was more that it just like, it's, of course there's a blizzard that makes him run, and of course he ends up at her cabin, and of course that they're the two people that run into each other, like so many really kind of moments. It didn't feel earned at all, and I think that kind of bothered me a lot, of much more so than him being caught off guard and being killed, was that it was just too many unbelievable moments in a game that touts realism.
Yeah, I heard them talk about that, like, the whole leading up to that stuff, like, and how they're going to get there is just, like, really tough to kind of come up with that. So it wasn't like this was the first thing they set on and then they're done. Like, they thought about it and they talked about it a lot, like, how are we going to get here? Because, we talked about the first time we talked about Last of Us, where I, you know, before I had thought, you know, obviously because of the marketing and everything, I didn't think Joel was going to die right away. I thought it was going to be that, you know, she finds Dina and Ellie and interrogates Dina on where where Joel is, and Dean is the one who gets hurt because all the marketing kind of made it seem that way. Like, again, which I didn't like, because I was like, but I don't know who this character is, so the revenge wouldn't matter. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's why I was like, it has to be Joel, because what, I wouldn't care about anybody else who dies in this if she goes off on the revenge, mm-hmm. you know, kick. But yeah, so it's like, then when he does get her, when the horde's kind of attacking her through that fence, and then it's like, oh, it's Tommy and Joel, which at least they do talk about, you know, I do like that it's not, they just didn't come out of nowhere. Like, they set it up early on, like, okay, Dina and Ellie, you're patrolling this area. Okay, Tommy and Joel are over here. We also need to go meet up with them, you know, because that was one thing to talk about, because they have, like, a bunch of different group, like, Jesse's going with his own patrol group, like, doing whatever sections. They know where they are, and that they also have to go. I thought it was, I think it was Ellie and Dina, they were supposed to go patrol some, I forget, I'd have to go see what's up, but at least, I do like they at least set it up that, you know, they were out there in this spot. So they know where they're at, because they even talk about it, when they go to that one cabin, and they look out on the porch, and like, they have the binoculars, and Dina's like, oh, well, tell me where the clock tower is, and stuff, and they're talking about like, okay, so-and-so's here, so-and-so's there, this is where we need to go. So I do like they kind of set up like, this is where the patrol zones are, so-and-so's here, so-and-so's there, so at least it was, you know, granted, yeah, it's convenient, but I mean, you kind of have to do some of that if you're going to get something going. But at least they kind of set up that, hey, at least it was there.
It's that nothing else in the game is supposed to be convenient, and a big part of the game is that all of this is like, it's a gruesome, grisly world, and it's not convenient, and people have to like struggle and die, and people lose, like, people are brutally beaten and tortured, stuff like that. And it's like, it's not supposed to be a convenient game. So it just went against, I guess, kind of the mood of the game that they seem to have tried to establish. I don't know. That bugs me. I have a lot of thoughts on like structure and pacing, and it's, of course, it's like armchair criticism of like, I don't know how to do it better. I just know that I don't like the way that it was done. Mm-hmm. And I really don't have better ideas, but I'm also not the person being paid to write the story.
It's like the preference thing. Like, I personally don't like the time skip way of telling stories, but it's just a personal preference. And in this instance, I see why they did it. And I see why they did it in specific places and told specific parts of the story in these specific ways and stuff like that. It's just, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it, yeah. Because it's the same criticism I have for anything else that does the time skip story. It's just like, now you're just jerking me all over the place, and I really just want to know what the story is. Stop beating around the bush. Just give me what you want to tell me, that kind of thing. So,
mm-hmm.
And yeah, yep. if they did it well, and if other people like that kind of like, they like that kind of storytelling, and they like the way that it was done in the beginning, they obviously don't have like that personal issue with that specific way of telling a story or that specific way of launching a story. But yeah, it's just like, I sort of agree that it just like, it happened so quickly and so conveniently that you don't get that, like, you don't get the suspense of it, of like, I mentioned before, like, what would happen if they were with everybody else? Like, if they were with Ellie and Dina, and they were, you know, with Jesse, and they were all outside the gates of Jackson, and then she finds out that she's with Joel and that kind of thing. So it's like, you don't get that, oh shit, moment of, you know, what's going to happen? What is she going to do? How's she going to do it? How's she going to handle it and stuff like that? But it just kind of was like, oh, of course. This happens this way, and oh, of course, like, she's in a position to immediately carry out what she came to do so that the rest of the story can take place.
Yeah. I saw Isley said he had to duck out as well, so I guess we could probably just stop there instead of going into the spoiler talk,
more spoilers
for the end of the game, but yeah, I'm sure. Who knows? We'll get there eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But right. Well, I guess that'll wrap it up for this episode. So thank you all for listening. Thank you, Izzy. Thank you, Zach.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see you all next time.
Later. Bye.